Okay, now we'll talk about a different concept of privacy that is more rigorous and gives us very precise guarantees. Let's say that I want to contribute my data to a medical database. Let's say somebody else also contributes the data. So now the database contains my records and this judge's records. Now let's say we have some algorithm pi. And this algorithm pi computes some output A. Now this output is public, so everybody sees what it is. Now the problem is that it might be possible for somebody that sees this output A to be able to reconstruct x1 or x2, our data. So this is obviously the case if pi is invertible, but it might also be the case when it is not invertible, but the adversary has some side information, some extra information. So what do we want from a privacy-preserving algorithm if we actually publish something that depends on the private data? First, we'd like some anonymity. So it would be hard to guess if somebody is actually within the database in the first place. The second is that even if we know that somebody is in the database, then it would not be possible to learn what the data is. That's secrecy. The third is that if some adversary has additional information, side information, then he cannot use that to amplify what he learns by this output of the algorithm. So for example, they cannot perform a linkage attack like we saw earlier in this Massachusetts example. And finally, the calculation has to remain useful. Of course, if the algorithm just gives you some completely random output that doesn't depend on the data at all, then it's completely useless. So it has to depend somehow on the data. Okay, let me motivate this with a simple example. Let's say that you have a number of athletes and you want to ask those athletes, have you doped in the past year? And you would like to be able to calculate the percentage of doping. Is there a way that you can get truthful or accurate results? I will ask you a question in class that you're going to answer. Specifically, have you used tobacco in the last year? Similar question. Now, how would an algorithm work that actually lets you give truthful results, truthful responses? One idea is to simply let you flip a coin, and then if it comes heads, say the truth. If it comes tails, flip it again and respond yes if that coin comes heads, and no if it does not. As a simple exercise, let's say that the average rate of positive responses that we get from this algorithm is P, and that everybody follows the protocol, and that the coin is fair, so it comes heads with probability 50%. Then, what is the true rate Q of drug use in the population? It's not very difficult. As we'll explain in the class, if you start from the other way around, you can basically say that the expected value of P, the probability of you actually getting a positive response, is, well, half the time you get a coin that says you should randomly say yes or no, and half of the time you actually say yes. And then half of the time you have to say the truth. And then of the people that have to say the truth, a proportion Q will be actually taking drugs. Okay. So this is the result. So the expected value of this P will be equal to that. So if we turn it around, then you can say that Q is equal to 2 times the expected value of P, minus half. Doesn't mean that our estimate P will be exactly equal to this. It just means that on average we'll get a good estimate. Now, this is a special case of what is called the randomized response mechanism. I will start with the binary case, which is simpler. In this case, the ith user, whose data is xi, binary data, responds with an output ai, 0 or 1, and with probability p, they lie. So they give a different response to the truth. And with probability 1 minus p, they say the truth. Now, because we have n different people, the data is x, this is vector x1, x2, x3, x4, xn, and the mechanism output is this vector of values a1 to an. Now, since the algorithm here will independently calculate a new value for each data entry, so the AI entry depends only on xi, not on the other xj's, that means that we can write the probability of the whole vector as the product of probabilities. Now in class, we should do this exercise. Have an adversary which has a prior probability that your specific value is zero. And given this prior probability and given that the observed randomized data a equal one, so you say you are taking drugs, what is their posterior belief that you're actually taking drugs? This is a specific instance of what is called a local privacy model. Here there is some real data, x1 to xn, but the analysts and the public are only seeing this private data, which is basically noisy versions of the original data. This kind of mechanism, this local privacy mechanism, is an instance of a differential private algorithm. So what is a differential private algorithm? So any stochastic algorithm mapping from the space of all possible data sets to a space of possible outputs, so that for any two data sets which are nearly the same, which are neighbors, the probability of the algorithm having a specific output A is almost the same for any two neighboring data sets. In particular, if the logarithmic ratio of the probability of a specific output for any two neighboring datasets x and x prime is bounded by epsilon, then this algorithm is said to be epsilon differentially private. Okay, so in an intuitive way, you can say that the algorithm is smooth. If you change the dataset very, very slightly, then the probability distribution of the outputs of the algorithm doesn't change very much. Okay, so I say probability distribution because we could say maybe you could say a deterministic algorithm as well, but this would not work so well because first of all you have to define some kind of metric in the space of outputs, which might not be possible. So if there is no metric here, then you cannot define a smooth algorithm. And secondly, you need stochasticity, otherwise if the algorithm is deterministic, then there is always some chance that somebody could infer something with certainty. So randomness is essential here. So let me just go through what a neighborhood means. So if you have a data set X and you remove an entry, then you have a neighboring data set. So it has one difference only. One entry has been removed. That's typically what is being referred to when we talk about neighborhoods, especially in this kind of databases where you have different rows of entries. If you have removed a line and then you add another line with different data, then you have a two neighbor. Yeah, so you can go further and further, you have further and further neighbors. So the guarantee that you have from differential privacy is mainly only about neighboring data sets, but of course you can extend it to not neighboring data sets. But what privacy tells you is that if the data sets are varying are differing very, very much, then the difference in the output has to be can be very large as well. But what you get is that if only one individual is missing from the data set, or one individual's data is changed in the data set, then the output distribution of the algorithm will be so similar that it will be impossible for anybody to tell whether or not this person was in the database in the first place or what the data were in the first place. That's because of this indistinguishability. So differential privacy was the first rigorous mathematical definition of privacy. And there are many, many relaxations and generalizations possible. There is also connection to learning theory and reproducibility. Currently, it is used by Apple and Google as well as Uber, and the most promising or interesting use right now is in the US 2020 census, where the results are analyzed through differential privacy. There are some problems in terms of complexity and how you can verify that the algorithm is actually differentially private, but these are out of the scope of this class.